Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Very well.
I'm well indeed. We have author Kurt Wenzel coming on the show in the next segment to discuss his new wonderful novel, Exposure, a futuristic novel set in L.A., which is getting some rave reviews. But before that, we're going to talk a little bit about something that got some press this weekend in the newspaper. It's the increasing number of restaurants which you can now order online. So as if the drive-through pick up your meal on the way through wasn't already impersonal enough, you can now never have to speak to a human being at all, pick up your BlackBerry, and place your order in many of these places online.
Well, that way we don't have to actually talk to each other anymore. You can order online. You can eat in your car by yourself while you're driving to the next very busy part of your life.
Sounds grand. The march of technology.
I think we might be doing it wrong. Mm. I'm not sure, but I think we might be doing it wrong. Something about, you know, it was bad enough when you pulled up to the McDonald's or whatever the fast food place was, and you placed your order with somebody in India, mm-hmm. and then they forwarded it ahead to the window.
Which is happening now.
To the window that's 8 feet away from you.
Here's a quote in the Sunday Times. "I hate calling up to order food," said Lewis Friedman, a Manhattan real estate broker. "It throws me over the edge. They put you on hold. They get the order wrong. It's always a crapshoot." But all that changed last month when he saw a sign in the window of Lenny's, a chain of sandwich shops in Manhattan. Friedman returned to his office and logged on, and at long last...
So Friedman didn't go in the restaurant. Did you catch that? What he did was he ran back to his office where he could talk to his computer some more.
"And at long last felt in control of his gustatory future. I'm in the driver's seat. I can click that I use skim milk. I can click that I like light skim milk. I can click that I want equal as opposed to sweet and low. Get over yourself. We're becoming a country of spoiled brats."
It sounds a little bit like Frasier and Niles is what it sounds like.
God. All right. Well, I have something else. Another study that came out having to do with fast food. They did a study, and this is frightening. This was actually – the link was emailed to us by a friend and listener under the subject line was scary. They did a study of young children, preschoolers, to demonstrate how advertising affects, tricks mm-hmm. children into
liking things that they wouldn't otherwise like or disliking things that they otherwise wouldn't dislike.
Thank you. I don't know why speech failed me there. And what they did was they took foods, various foods, and wrapped some of them in McDonald's wrappers and some of them not in McDonald's wrappers and fed them to the preschoolers.
It's beautiful.
And the children, whether it was fries or carrots, if it came wrapped in the McDonald's wrapper, children 3 to 5 years old way preferred the McDonald's food, thought it tasted better.
This is a simple and powerful study.
It really is.
It's a simple and powerful study because what does it tell you? It tells you a number of things. It tells you that McDonald's advertising to children is working. Okay? They are successfully expressing to children that their food is more appealing to them.
Even if it's not.
Even if it's not. But there's a counterpoint to this argument. And I think that the counterpoint is we have a very, very powerful vehicle here to change the eating habits of our children if we so choose.
Well,
do you think we'll so choose?
I don't think so. I don't think there's enough money in so choosing. Well, here's what McDonald's has said. McDonald's has said they're going to, as a lot of food companies now, as they have sort of stuck their finger in the air and taken the temperature of where the regulatory climate is going, there are a number of states and there are a number of people in the federal government who believe that we should restrict advertising to children under 12.
Of course.
Europeans restrict advertising directed at children under 12. And the reasoning behind that is studies have shown conclusively that children under 12 have a very hard time distinguishing between, say, news and advertising. Mm-hmm. They don't know. They can't process the
difference. Especially children under 7. It's especially powerful to children under 7.
And so should we be advertising to the children?
Of course we shouldn't. You know, and we'll go back to the McDonald's things in a second. But, you know, Disney pulled, was going to do a wine based on the movie Ratatouille.
Right.
It was going to have the cute little mouse on the label drinking a glass of wine. And, you know, finally somebody came along and said, hey, well, kids movie. Stop encouraging to get drunk on wine.
Oh, well, you know, but see, I have a problem with it. I do personally have a problem with that. I think that, frankly, if I ever have kids, they're going to have a little wine at the table. Mm-hmm. You know, just like everybody in Europe that doesn't have the same alcohol problem that we do. All those other
I understand, but again, what they're doing is they're taking this movie, which is directed at children.
Yeah, I saw the movie. Totally directed at me. I felt like a child, but it was directed at me.
But they're taking this movie, which is marketed to children, and using the marketing from that in order to sell wine, and that's a fuzzy line.
Well, what's funny is they weren't trying to sell the wine to children, obviously.
Of course.
It was Disney. But we're so paranoid that that might entice the child to drink wine or to think positively of wine that we have to take it off the air. But why do we allow McDonald's to advertise, you know, harmful foods to our kids?
Just harmful foods to our kids. I mean, you're talking about McDonald's advertises on Channel 13, you know, sponsored by Ronald McDonald.
Well, they don't call it advertising.
Okay, so it's not advertising, but there they are.
Yeah.
They're ever present.
They underwrite.
They're underwrite, okay. They're in our schools. They're everywhere. And you've seen the power of this, okay? You now know the power of what those ads are exactly. Children will tell you that foods taste better if they are wrapped in a McDonald's wrapper.
That's a scary study.
What do we do about it?
Well, here's the other issue, and I think that
can the government spend as much money as McDonald's does on advertising food to children?
No,
and
it shouldn't have to. I mean, the idea is European countries prohibit advertising directed at children under 12. We shouldn't have a war of advertising for children to children under 12. I'll put it to you this way. Look at it in this light. In any other transaction, if you had an adult trying to transact business or entice a child, you'd think that was creepy, right? Well, I think it should be the same way with advertising. I mean, and, you know, we have an obesity epidemic. We have a diabetes epidemic. We are eating too much fast food. And when you get branded, the other thing that studies have shown, different studies in the study we just talked about today, is that when you get successfully an affinity to a brand, especially a food brand when you're a kid, that becomes comfort food to you. Mm-hmm. And that becomes part of the way you look at life.
You know what I think the problem is?
What?
Ronald McDonald's has too much exposure.
We'll be back in just a moment talking with Kurt Wenzel, author of the new novel Exposure. Central Jersey 1450, it's 1115.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Kurt Wenzel. In the spirit of full disclosure, Kurt is an old friend of Mark and mine, but he's also a successful novelist. He's written Lit Life and Gotham Tragic, and his new novel is Exposure.
Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys. Great to hear your voices.
Yeah, likewise. On the radio, no less.
And that's bizarre.
It is a little bizarre. Now, not as bizarre as seeing novels with your name as the author. That's pretty cool.
Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, this is it's funny, when I published my first book, it seemed so extraordinary. I couldn't believe when I got the box, you know, in the mail. And by now, when number three, it's sort of it's almost old hat, which is it's strange for me to say. But yeah, I'm been very lucky to get three out.
Well, you know, it's funny. We have to figure out some way to tie this into the Restaurant Guys radio show. So we all did work in restaurants together back in the day.
That's right.
Now, talk to us about Exposure, because there are a lot of issues that you deal with in this novel that we talk about all the time. One we sort of, in a way, we talked about in the first segment. Tell our audience about Exposure.
Well, it's set in Los Angeles about 10 years in the future, and it's this sort of heightened media hell, essentially, with these large billboards everywhere. I call them the MIBs, or moving image billboards, and they replace the old static billboards that you see everywhere now. And it's like big movie screens everywhere, constantly advertising products. And one of the most prevalent faces on these billboards is a man named Colt Reston, who is a incredibly famous and successful actor, probably the most, you know, the successful actor of his day. I guess maybe Tom Cruise would be, you know, sort of an analogy. And he's extremely handsome, and he one day he wakes up and he looks in the mirror and there's something not quite right with his face.
Same thing happened to me, Kurt.
Yeah, one day.
that's called Monday for most of us. But then a few days, and then but his friends tell him he looks fine. He's being vain. He's a very vain person. And then, but a few days later, wakes up, and now there's something. There's something clearly wrong. Something terribly wrong with him. And he has a sort of a down and out screenwriter friend who goes investigating through this futuristic world of Los Angeles to try to find out what's wrong with him as he goes into the as Colt goes into the hospital and lets the doctors try to figure out what's going on. So. I was stimulated by what you guys were saying in the beginning because it does deal a lot with advertising and the way that images have thrust themselves upon us and the way that advertising is getting into all aspects of our life. And certainly, you're talking about the indoctrination of children. I mean, it's extraordinary, you know, the prevalence of advertising my son the other day comes up to me out of nowhere. He's 5 years old. He said, "Hey, Dad, what's in your wallet?" which isn't like I forget what product that's for.
It's a credit card, Capital One.
Credit card.
Actually, and what you said was, "I'm an author, son." Not very much.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, you know, when you have children, you know, spouting advertising jingles. It's pretty scary. So, but yeah, it deals with it. I think it's only going to get more and more prevalent in our lives.
Well,
I think.
You know, I think we expect to see advertising on radio, and now we expect to see advertising on television, and there's a certain amount of that we're willing to tolerate. But
right.
it's expanding, and I think one of the things that the book points out very, very well is how much it's expanding and how much it expands, and when it first expands, you kind of take umbrage.
You're shocked by it,
you know.
And
all of a sudden, there's an advertisement behind home plate,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that advertisement changes every inning.
Yeah.
So it's a different advertiser every inning, and you sit back and you wonder, you know, will they soon be painting the ivy at Wrigley Field to be an ad for something? And you know, will advertisements for other products appear on the walls of the restaurants that we sit in?
I think that's one of the interesting things about your book, Kurt, is that it's been called a mashup of science fiction and a mystery novel, and
right.
But where the science fiction goes, it's you know a lot of where you've placed the advertising in the context of your book seems very shocking to us, but you know a lot of where advertising is now would have seemed very shocking to us, as Mark just said, and in a way. It strikes me that a lot of where you've placed these advertising that, you know, you'd look, it seems very Orwellian to read it now, but it seems like it's a logical extension of where things are going. Do you think it's a logical extension or do you think it's an exaggeration?
Well, no, I wasn't trafficking in hyperbole here. I really do think it'll head this way. I mean, you see people now who are willing to put tattoos on their body to advertise products.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy. So yeah, and in the book I have that eventually towards the end of the novel you have people who are wearing. I mean these billboards, they have like mini versions of them. They're like little tiny panels that you can attach to your body and wear them around. And
you get paid for that.
You'll get paid for that.
And they're permanently attached.
I know it sounds crazy, but when you have people, I thought, well, if you're willing to put a tattoo on your forehead that says, Sunglass Hut.
Right,
you know,
eat at Joe's.
Now, where did you see that people are actually putting tattoos on their body, and are they getting paid for it now, or is it a status thing? I mean, the Nike swoosh people, you know, put on there a lot.
Yeah, no, no. It wasn't done. None of the major corporations are doing it yet because it's it's still a little taboo. But no, this guy offered himself on eBay to put tattoos on his face, and like the local dry cleaners paid him $10,000 or something like that, and he had this done. He's got like two or three of them on his face.
And this isn't your novel. This is reality.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
True.
All right, we have to take a short break. We'll be back with Kurt Wenzel, author of the novel Exposure, in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with novelist Kurt Wenzel about his new book, Exposure. We were talking before the break, Kurt, about... So there are people now who actually have been paid to put advertising on their body, so... Your book sort of you're not dealing in hyperbole. You're taking this to a logical conclusion. In your book, there are video screens everywhere. There's advertising. Actually, people can have screens permanently attached to them for a fee. They'll get paid for it.
Francis and I were discussing during the break that like prostitution, if prostitution's illegal, that should be illegal.
You shouldn't be able to be paid to get a tattoo.
Yeah, there should be a level of this idea of what's sensible. I mean, I don't think that advertising is inherently evil. Especially when it's for my novel, I think it's inherently good. But I don't think, I think there's a level of sensibility about all this. And I think that there are moments when we're really passing that. And, also in the novel, there's this idea that these sort of plexiglass panels on the sidewalk, where as you're walking along, that you'll look down and there'll be like an image there, and I really think that all signs point to an incredible explosion of advertising, and it's bad on another level that advertising like this is bad is because so much money now goes to the advertising of a product that there's a disproportionate amount of money spent on the advertising rather than producing a good product.
Right, down the product.
Because now it's you can produce something that's terrible, but if it's advertised correctly, it'll do wonderfully. I think a perfect example is Absolut Vodka, which is people who are working the business know that Absolut is not a particularly good vodka, but the advertising especially about 5 or 6 years ago was fantastic. They did a wonderful job with it. Now they've been surpassed by Grey Goose in advertising.
But, well, I would say that if you wanted to bring it back to the food world, the phenomenon that is Rachel Ray. I mean, Rachel Ray makes bad food on television. You don't need to be in the business to realize that the liverwurst on a cracker is nothing special. Yet I see her, but she's a billion-dollar industry, and her face is everywhere. And I can't imagine that they even get 20 people to sit in the studio audience and clap.
You are so going to get hate mail about Rachel Ray right now. coming soon. Hate mail. That was Francis who was talking badly about Rachel Ray.
Come on. Nobody listens to our show like Rachel Ray. We're gonna go to the news. We're going to come back after the news and talk more about this novel, Exposure. It's a mashup between science fiction and mystery, and we'll tell you how to get it when we come back after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Kurt Wenzel. He's a novelist who's written two novels in the past, Lit Life and Gotham Tragic. His current novel is called Exposure. Hey, and I'll tell you what. If you would like to read all of Kurt Wenzel's novels, you can email us. First of all, you should go and buy it on Amazon.com for the new one. But if you want to take a chance, you can email restaurantguysradio.com, email Francis at restaurantguysradio.com, and say, I want a book. And we're going to pick five people at random out of all the people who respond, and we're going to send you the Kurt Wenzel trilogy. We're going to give you a copy of Lit Life, a copy of Gotham Tragic, and a copy of Exposure. You'll have all your beach reading for the month of August, and everything would be great. So, Kurt, I'm going to hit you up for those three books. Thanks very much. I don't care about that. But we were talking before the break about your novel and how it's set in the future and how advertising has become so prominent in this world. And it's good. We think that's where the world may be going. Why did you choose to make that such a prominent part of your book, and what implications does that hold, do you think? What happens to a society that's so submerged in advertising?
Wow. Well, that's a large question. I think that I suppose that if you look at the culture of children these days and teenagers, their emphasis on products and things of that nature. I think that's unfortunate, and I think those they're gonna grow older and you become to live your life just to buy things and to me it's a sort of a corporate sort of nightmare that to just live and work and buy things is sort of an awful way to live. But I think the novel too also really does emphasize, advertising is an emphasis, but also I think there's some things about the celebrity culture too that I think we haven't really talked about. And
Let me posit something out there about that where your novel deals with both the celebrity culture, which we've gone crazy about, and advertising that involves moving images, and that people are surrounded by moving images, whether it's resurrected old movie stars or the celebrities of the day. It seems to me that people in the book, except for your protagonists, are living through, like, there's something about the moving image, whether it's a video game or watching television, that makes you feel like maybe you've done something, so it allows you to sit on your couch. Where, I've always said if all the television stopped working tomorrow, people would be so bored, we'd have music schools popping up everywhere, people would learn how to play an instrument, because when you're bored, you've got to figure out something to do. The moving image and the fascination with someone else's life allows you to sort of be nothing yourself.
Yeah, I think as people work so darn hard and they spend so much time making a living, one of the things I talk about in the book is one of my characters says that there's no more arc to life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really true. And I think that's why we're so sort of camped out on the couch. We go there to sort of have vicarious experiences, because I think for the most part, our lives are somewhat mundane and more mundane than they've ever been, because we have such a level of comfort here in the United States, and also we've worked so incredibly hard. There's not a lot of time for a lot of other things, and I think it's one of the unfortunate things about our prosperity is the amount of hours we work and our lack of experience. There's this real vicariousness, which I think is one of the reasons we have this phenomena of the reality show, where people watch them have drama and excitement in their lives that they themselves don't really seem to have.
Well, I also think in turn, that puts a lot of pressure on your vacations, for instance, the time that you do finally spend focused on doing this one thing, or even our time in restaurants. Rather that they're focused on it being this regal experience, rather than being focused upon the interaction with your friends and that time of breaking bread together.
Yeah, I still work in a restaurant part time, and I do notice that when people come in, there's a for some people, there's an anxiety that they have to have a really good time because they finally found a babysitter, they finally found a couple hours to put together. And it's not nearly the relaxing atmosphere that you might think it would be. And I think that's probably more true of Americans, I think, than anywhere else. And I think also with the phenomenon of the celebrity chef and the celebrity chef restaurants, that people go in really, really pushing for a great experience and really expecting something when it really is just about, you know, the restaurant can't bring, and the staff is not necessarily going to make you have a good time. I think it's more that you have to come to the restaurant with your, with good friends, good conversation, something to say, or the ability to relax and enjoy food and wine. I think because people have less experience than they've ever had, I think that they're not quite as equipped to have a great time as they used to. Americans don't really know how to relax, unfortunately.
A great restaurant, I think, is a great vehicle to bring people together.
But if you don't like the person across from you, I can't help you.
Yeah, I work at the bar. I do find that a lot of couples like to have dinner at the bar now. That's sort of a new thing, but I notice a lot of time it's because they don't really have a lot to say, and there's the proximity to the bartender is a way for them to sort of inject a third guest into their lives because they need that influx of energy in conversations they don't have themselves. I know you guys must have seen this phenomenon, though. You see these older couples in restaurants so often who. They come in, and they sit there, and they just don't have anything to say to one another. It's really, it's such an uncomfortable thing to watch, to see people who, and it's, I think it's sad that they don't have much to say to one another. And of course, there's hundreds of other people who are having a grand time all around them, which makes it seem almost worse. But that's one of the things I really have a tough time with working in restaurants. Seeing these people, unfortunately, don't know how to or don't have much to say to one another anymore after all these years.
I'll tell you, Kurt, I see it more with younger people. I see it more with younger people who are, they're from this video game era, and if there's not lights and things flashing, it's more difficult for them to interact.
Mark,
how do you guys deal with people who are using cell phones and video players and disc players at tables? I know you must see that a lot more now.
We actually, that's a very interesting point. And you've taken over our show and are now interviewing us. I think it's terrific. It's interesting because we have, like many restaurants, we have on our menu, we ask that people refrain from using cell phones in the dining room. Now listen, somebody's babysitter calls and says, I need you to come home. Somebody picks up a phone and discreetly says, okay, we'll be there in a few minutes, or excuse me, let me, and they step outside and they go to the bar area to use the telephone. It's not a problem. But we did have a problem, and it was once in a blue moon, someone would sit in the middle of the dining room, pick up their telephone, and just start talking loudly. And it's much more distracting than someone talking to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that when you walked down a city street or you were in a restaurant and someone was talking to themselves, you knew they were crazy. Now they may have something in their ear, and there may be a voice in their head.
But every once in a while, it boggles my mind that someone will come to a fancy restaurant and pop open their laptop and turn on a movie.
Yeah. And turn on a movie with the sound on. And you know our dining room in Stage Left has got these kind of golden tones and it's very soft lighting. Except for behind this guy, where there's like the every time there's an explosion of a spaceship
dun,
on his
dun,
screen.
Dun, 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 dun.
And, even, and even if the sound is off, it turns that corner of the room blue and it's flashing. And what I've been amazed at is that we've asked some people, we said, I'm terribly sorry. We ask that you refrain from using laptops in the dining room. And sometimes we'll have a private room available to move them to. But they're shocked. Like, what the heck do you mean I can't?
Like, why wouldn't I have my laptop out in the middle of a fine dining restaurant? Or in the middle of a McDonald's, for that matter. I don't understand it.
How do you feel about it, Kurt? The intrusion of media into the dining room.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's my God, it is shocking. It really is because that, we Americans work so hard. You figure that that's the 1 hour and a half that they have to really converse and interact with one another. It's distressing to see young kids plugged in during dinner. I mean, that's sort of where you learn, how to be an adult is when you overhear. I remember, as a young kid and overhearing conversations and just sort of fascinated at the adult culture, but there are so many children are so plugged in that I think it's too bad.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk more about your novel Exposure, which you can find out more about at restaurantguysradio.com. You can email us and try and win a free copy of it. And when we come back, I also want to talk about the unusual juxtaposition in your novel of lions attacking in Los Angeles. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 11:46.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We're speaking with our friend Kurt Wenzel. He's written three critically acclaimed novels. His latest novel is Exposure, which we recommend you go to Amazon.com and pick up right away. Or you can email us, Francis at RestaurantGuysRadio.com, to either learn more about it and maybe get a free copy of all three of Kurt's books. Okay, we're talking about a futuristic novel set about 15 years from now, 17 years from now, something like that. A lot is futuristic about it, except there's one thing that's a little unusual, which is there are lions that roam the streets of L.A. What are the lions there, Kurt?
Well, this is something that has plagued Los Angeles over the last 20 years. So I have a friend who lives there. He's been telling me about this. Apparently, you know, their proximity to the San Gabriel Mountains, these lions have come down, and, you know, they feed in these garbage dumpsters. And this is something that they're seeing more and more. There's the mountain lions in people's backyard, and it's getting to be pretty scary. And one of the phenomena is that what happens is they feed on the fast food garbage disposals.
So, you know, we talked about this earlier, Kurt. Not only do children think things taste better if they're wrapped in a fast food wrapper, but according to you, lions also think things taste better if they're wrapped in a fast food wrapper.
It's true. What happens is they're apparently even more susceptible to a high glycemic diet, which is, of course, what the fast foods offer. And they've gone rabid for these for fast food, and they no longer are interested in rodents in their old diet. So they're all sort of wandering farther and farther into downtown Los Angeles looking for this this high glycemic food.
So this is truly a current trend.
It is. It's more exaggerated in the novel. Again, you know, this is the great thing about writing a book 10 years in the future. You get to sort of use a lot of
gives you a little latitude.
Exactly. So, but yeah, and in the book, there's quite a few. Now, you know, it's isolated, but it seems to be a growing problem, and they don't know quite what to do about it. But there's been people have been attacked, and. There was an article a couple of months ago where strolling down Sunset Boulevard were two lions, mountain lions, in the middle of broad daylight. So it's getting scary. Yeah, you're right. They're fast food junkies.
So there's a lesson to be learned here, Kurt, that if you're in L.A., don't walk around with a Big Mac in your pocket.
That's right.
Let's talk about something else you deal with you that plays a prominent role in your book that has just begun. Is we've seen those old commercials where like Humphrey Bogart is pimping a Pepsi or something, right? Where they superimpose modern images on an old
and they take the cigarette out of his hand and put a Pepsi in there.
Right. Now, right. You call that this has become big business in the world of Exposure. They're called Restars. Tell us about the Restars.
Yeah, it's this technology that is actually there is being developed now, where You're going to have movies now where they found a way to take the old images of the great movie stars, and not only can they, as Mark said, sort of, you know, replace a cigarette with a can of Pepsi, but they can actually alter, make them do it whatever they want. So you're going to have, in the future, you'll have movies with, let's say, Harrison Ford literally talking to the digital image of Cary Grant in a movie.
So Mickey Rooney's making a comeback.
Yeah, they're all making a comeback.
Well, now this is pretty big in your novel. In your novel, are the dead movie stars happy about this?
No, they're certainly not. There's a I suppose there's a sort of a ghost in the machine element to the novel where they're making the first digitized movie or Restars movie. Is being made in the novel, and Montgomery stars with I believe it's Cary Grant and Marilyn Monroe. And what they, as they're making the movie, suddenly Montgomery, the digitized image of Montgomery Clift, gets up and walks off the set. Now, how this happens, how this animated star can have his own will is something that you have to read the novel about. But he does get up and walk off and begins a rebellion among the Restars.
Maybe Marilyn Monroe was paying too much attention to Bogey.
Actually, I don't think Montgomery Clift would care about that.
Yeah, that's
I guess that's true. Maybe Bogey was paying too much attention to Marilyn Monroe.
That's what we know now. Well, Kurt, the novel is wonderful, and we're going to link it up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And again, a couple lucky folks, if they email us, you'll get yourself a copy of it. And Kurt's other books, which are still great, which are Lit Life and Gotham Tragic. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Kurt.
All right, man. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:54. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. You know, we were talking with Kurt Wenzel, whose new book is Exposure, and I'm amazed at, you know, everybody says they're going to write a novel, right? Well, when Kurt's first novel came out and it got reviewed in the New York Times.
A lot of acclaim.
And every other major publication in the country. And then that established him as an author, you know, let him quit his night job, as it were, and move to East Hampton and live in a swell house.
It's not so bad.
But the book is great, and I think what you and I have both commented on are little when an artist takes inspiration from life, especially, well, at least mm-hmm. I can only speak about Kurt, really. And I remember there were some painters. There was a guy named Michael Hill who was a great painter, and I don't know whatever happened to him, whether he's still, you know, getting the acclaim he once got. But we worked with him in a restaurant. We worked with Kurt in a restaurant. And I remember when Michael did paintings that were of New Brunswick, of the skyline of New Brunswick, and these would show in mm-hmm. galleries. I was shocked at that. And when you read Kurt's novels, there are little snippets of dialogue where you say, hey, wait a second, I know
sure.
where he took inspiration from that from.
Sure. I mean, you see it in his characters. And one of the things that I like about knowing Kurt as well as I do, and Kurt is a very good friend of mine and Francis, in case you didn't glean that from the show. One of the things that I really like about reading Kurt's novels is there's a verisimilitude there. There's reality there. You see it, and you know, in this book that just came out, Exposure, a lot is about, you know, an aspiring young baseball player who, you know, has an injury and falls out of the baseball world. Well, Kurt was an awesome pitcher for Sayreville High School here in Central Jersey.
Threw his arm out freshman year of college.
Threw his arm out freshman year of college or senior year of high school, whichever it was, and you know, and didn't ever get to the acclaim that he might have otherwise gotten. But you see that. You see the reality of that. It really shines through,
well,
through in the book.
And I think that one of the things that is interesting is you have, you know, he can relate the situation that happened to him. But one of the ways one of the things that makes a great book or a great painting is that while it is a fictional story, it's a fictional story that's used to tell a truth
mm-hmm.
in a different way. And the books ring very, very true.
Well, even in Kurt's earlier books, in Gotham Tragic and especially in Lit Life, there's a lot of restaurant stuff in there. And you know that Kurt's worked in restaurants. Since college, he worked in restaurants, and even now he just said he still
a couple of days a week,
a couple days a week for fun. But you see it shining through, and just a truth that is not in most people's
mind. Let me point that out to you. Kurt's out in East Hampton. He's bartending a couple of days a week for fun. But, you know, if you – there is something about restaurants. Why are we attracted to restaurant reality shows specifically? Why are we attracted to the restaurant business? It's because it's such a concentrated locus of where life happens.
Mm-hmm.
You spend – 8 hours in a restaurant shift, especially as a bartender, you get to see a lot of life. And I think that as an author or an artist, you need that. You can't be alone in your house all the time.
You know, but we were talking about that earlier, and I guess that might be why we're so sensitive to that. When people are not enjoying their time in a restaurant or not really living the restaurant, not enjoying it, not having fun with their friends while they're at a restaurant – I'm especially sensitive to that because I think it's one of those places that we do go out and get a chance to escape our regular lives.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I hope you go to Amazon.com and pick up Exposure by Kurt Wenzel. It's a wonderful novel, perfect summer read. I hope you've enjoyed the hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.